hundreds and hundreds of comments are coming in relation to the fuel protests. Never seen anything like it. Very rarely. I have seen stuff like it, but very, very rarely. Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin's Son, McLaughlin Gunn, Solicitors Letterkenny and Remelton. We're going to take your legal questions in a moment. But Seamus, interesting to get your views, because I know you watch very closely everything that's going on in terms of, you know, the current affairs, if I could put it to you like that. Your reflections on what's happening at the moment.
It's unreal the way this has taken flight. There was a comment very early in the week by one of the organisers saying, let's shake up the government. And that really has rung true. We see the masses that are assembling in these various different hot spots in the country. And the level of disruption cannot be underestimated. So it's a very difficult situation, because from a law and order point of view, which is really trying to assess it and seeing, well, is there a balance? And there has to be a balance between allowing people to have lawful protests, which is one of our, you know, constitutional rights. Everyone wants to say free assembly, and of course that has to be protected. And against that, then you have a balancing act. Well, you have to say, well, people have to be allowed to go about their business, you know, so, and people have to be allowed to get to work, and you can't be parking and disrupting traffic. And the law enforcement agencies have to try to steer a path between both these competing rights all the parties that are involved in it. Like, if you were taking sort of the heavy hand or the law to it, you'd say, well, There's certainly ammunition there to suggest that there could be breaches of the Public Order Act for willful obstruction of the highways and getting in and out of the city and getting in and out of forecourts. That is in fact a public order offence, and you could be issued with fixed charge penalty notice for that. That has been mooted. But is that really the way to go? There's talk about dialogue today, who's involved, who's not involved. There's a lot of tinkering around that. Not overly constructive, I think. I think you have to get all the parties in a room here and see what can be done. But what is the contradiction in terms, really, Greg, as I see it, is there's not an oil shortage as such. It's that we can't get it out to the forecourts. And that is unparalleled, I think. Like, before, we had fuel crisis, where maybe we couldn't get fuel. But here, the fuel is in the country. And in fact, it can't now be landed in the country because the tanks are already full, because they haven't been moved on. So it's a very difficult situation, because the momentum that it has gained, and it is apolitical as such, and continues to gain, and the public support behind it, that is, to me, somewhat unprecedented as well. You know, we've had before marches on the Dáil, we've had the IFA, the Farmers Association, and that arriving in Dublin en masse and causing disruption in the past. This has now gone on we're going into 3 days, coming into the weekend. And then flip it over and say, well, look at the people who are being disrupted. Look at the small businesses that, are already down, maybe retailers, maybe restaurateurs, and they're cut off from their clientele completely. And where's the justification for that?
But if the point being, though, if that something isn't done, all of that goes anyway. I mean, listen, the restaurants can't put food on the table if the farmers go out of business because they can't afford the fertilizer and the diesel. You know, the outcome effectively could be the same, whatever the situation. You know, I think people are prepared to take the hit on this, and some might say it's easy for me to say, for the greater good, that this is the breaking point.
That's the way it's been teed up, Greg. There's no doubt about that. It's going to happen. It'll kill the businesses anyway because of the type of prices that are out there at present. But then look at how do you go about tackling this? I mean, they want to cap fuel prices, and they want to remove the carbon tax. I think they're the two main points, and they're not going to move until they get some concession on that. There has been some very small concessions on it. I fully agree. I think the cost of fuel is too high. I think there is too much tax on it. I think we're one of the dearest in the EU on that. Yeah. And you can do comparisons right across, and it's difficult to justify that. And that's really where I think the government have to look at and say, well, let's at least come on a par with other European countries in relation to price. Mm. If we're still above those, we find it's very, very difficult to justify.
But you have to dig a bit deeper into this and understand it. Not you, Seamus, us as a nation. We have been set climate targets based on our GDP. Our GDP is driven primarily to a great extent by corporation tax, which we're told not to rely on because it could go at any stage. So our climate target is way, 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 way higher than other countries of similar sizes. So that's a disadvantage. We're paying higher carbon taxes based on a GDP that we're told we shouldn't really rely on. Secondly, if that target was not high enough, the government took a decision to actually increase our targets above the already inflated target that was already there. So much of this is of our own doing, and much of this is because it's been based on corporation tax receipts that we're told we should never rely on in the first place. So that's how the people of Ireland are being disadvantaged compared to equally sized nations. Why can't, for a period of time, it doesn't absolve us of our responsibility to the planet, albeit whilst the world's burning elsewhere, why can't they cap diesel at 190, petrol at 170, agricultural diesel at 120 for 3 months? And whether it's through rebates or from carbon tax or general taxation, we've got that rainy day fund which we can continue to contribute to. It makes life affordable, it makes this go away, and it makes the government look like they're doing something because they are doing something. And that's it. I don't want to simplify it, but
is that not
the solution?
It certainly might be part of the solution. Will it solve this issue? I have some doubts about that.
I think if you get diesel under 2, you get petrol a little closer to 150, and you get agricultural diesel down from the 180, 190 where it's at now, to give farmers a break coming into, because the government can't do much about fertilizer. No one's talked about that yet anyway. You know, home heating oil, you can probably park that because we're heading into milder weather, so there's an out there and they're lucky. I don't think people want the sun, the moon and the stars, but I think if you got, I think €2 is a ceiling for diesel, and maybe like 170 for petrol, and take 60, 65 cent off agricultural diesel, and the money's there for it.
Well, it's still probably far too dear at 2 diesel in comparison to EU levels. It's still way above EU levels. And the point that I make is that we have to get back to that. You're mentioning our GDP. That's fair enough. And that's driven, yes, by our corporation tax levels. But that's an argument to be made in isolation in Europe. If we were having proper representation there should be a positive argument being put forward that this is not reflective of the GDP of the country, and therefore reducing that accordingly. Mm. And that has never even been put out there as far as I'm concerned. But
the only person I've ever heard talking about that is me, and I hope I'm not wrong. Go ahead.
Yep. Yeah, in relation to prices, like green diesel, I believe, was less than 90 cents. It's now up to nearly 150. So that's a huge, huge element of it. And I think that is the element that has to be actually tackled, because that's what we're relying on for getting the supermarkets and the stuff on the shelves and getting all the goods to market, so to speak. And that is a big, big problem, because what is it going to cost? The last thing I heard on that was sometime last night, it was suggested that already with the small little few cent that took off it, it's costing a billion a quarter at the moment. And if they go for what they're looking for and cap it, it's going to cost a billion a month to the exchequer. So obviously do the maths on that and then say, can we actually afford that? So, but let's go back to where we are at now. We have a blockade in this country, and it's gaining momentum. It won't be too long until that's reversed. There is momentum with it now, but it can't stick there forever. So the solution and part of it, the capping of it, has to be tackled now. But there has to be a way going forward in relation to the likes of the carbon tax. And that is probably at a different level than protests and blockades outside forecourts. And also then, I think you still have to remember, you have to bring this home to all the services that are being seriously disrupted. And they haven't come out yet with a voice. But if this goes on into next week, I think that you can see the flip side and the momentum change in some way.
I think I'm not saying you're right or wrong. I wouldn't dare do that. But I think what you're saying there is what the government hopes happens and what their government believes happens. I think they are sitting there saying, if we can get through this weekend, the children are back at school, bish, bash, bosh. Me personally, I don't think that's how this is going to work. I think this is the people are going to be inconvenienced. We know that we're all inconvenienced, but I think the public will think that this is for the greater good. But we shall see.
Finally, on that though, and just to you, just for a second, think about this, Greg. We have all got good public representatives. We have a Dáil with 160 plus members in it, and they're meant to be representing the people of this country. And these arguments and this type of situation that is to be dealt with should really be dealt with at national level in the Dáil. What we have here now is an apolitical organisation gaining serious momentum, mm-hmm. and it's bringing politics into question. And that's a slippery slope. And so just be guarded about that.
Yes, but I don't think people are too much interested in the government standing up on one side, the opposition standing up on the other, screaming at each other, watching a one-minute package on the 6-1 News, and then let's carry on until the next day. I think people are taking control of the situation now. It's very interesting, and it's very critical. Back with Seamus after the break. 0866 25,000 is your WhatsApp or our WhatsApp and text number. 0749 125,000. We're in the company of Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn and McLaughlin Gunn Solicitors Letterkenny and Rimalton, and also online. We'll talk about that in a mo. But first, I want to get some questions, Seamus. I was left a house by my uncle. I cannot afford to put it into my name. Can I sell it on without it being put into my name? This comes up time and time again.
Well, yes, it does. It comes up in different varieties, Greg. It's fairly topical because the caller has an apprehension, obviously, about not being able to put a dwelling house into their name, and it seems that they're a nephew or a niece of the deceased. So, firstly, I would say to you that may not be the situation. If they talk maybe a wee bit of tax advice, and I'm not a tax advisor, and I never portray myself as such. But if the individual does not own another house, and this has been their home for 3 years before the death or thereabouts of the person who's passed away, and they continue to live on it for 6 years later, there would be an exemption that applies. Their threshold for tax is 40,000, and that's obviously quite low. I've often mentioned about them being up. They've only come up from 32.5 to 40. But there is an exemption there. That would be worth looking into. Now, if that is not the situation, and let's assume for the purpose of the question it's not, if they so wish and they want to sell, they do not have to put it into their own name. If it depends on whether they're the personal representative of the deceased or the executor, but the estate could sell it and they could obtain the benefit of the money as a personal representative of the deceased selling the property. So they don't have to go as far as that, but they will still, if it's a CAT situation on capital taxation, they still will have an inheritance as such, and therefore they'll be paying tax on the difference between their own threshold, which at the moment stands at 40,000, and the value they would get for the property after all expenses. And that's at 33%. But if it's a situation where they've never owned a home and they lived in this house and they're going to continue to live in it, there may be an exemption there. So that could be worth looking into, but they don't have to put it into their name to proceed to sell it.
Interesting. My dad before me and I have always taken sand from our local beach to bed our sheep. I was recently approached by the Guardian, told it's a special area of conservation and I have to stop doing this immediately. My question is, do I? If I've done this all my life, a farmer further up the beach has his area fenced off and says his land is his and I can take it from up there. Would his land also fall under this special area of conservation? I thought you couldn't remove beach from a sand, whether it was a special area of sand from a beach, whether it was a special area of conservation or not. But anyway, you give us the facts.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't disagree with you there, Greg. I would tread very warily, regardless of traditions and everything else. The individual or the caller may get in touch with the National Parks and Wildlife Services, and I think that they come under the Housing and Local Government and Heritage Department. And it's worth checking that out, because if they look into it, a special area of conservation is just that, and it should not be interfered with or damaged or sand removed at all. And that is just the position on it. It's hard and fast, unless it was being removed for some particular purpose, maybe to manage sand dunes or something, which isn't the case here. It's been removed of it from the way the question reads for personal use. So I would be inclined to tread very warily. It's protected under EU. It'll be under the EU legislation. Now, you can obtain, if they go get in touch with the National Parks and Wildlife Services, they can obtain a map of the areas of special area of conservation, which might be helpful to them in identifying the particular property that is involved here. But regardless of the fact that they so has been doing this habitually, maybe for many years, they haven't really established any rights. The actual foreshore itself would be governed by the foreshore legislation back in the 1930s, and that would be under government control. So they certainly wouldn't have any rights to that. If they intend to fence off a piece of land, well, they do that, but they have to establish adverse possession, and again, that's likely to be challenged. So I think the removal of sand, it could be seen also as it could be seen as a development under the Planning Act.
Yeah, and I don't want to be flippant, but I think they maybe think they're in the right of way territory. It feels to me a little bit like me texting in saying I've been driving without car tax for 10 years and I was stopped by a guard and said, you must tax your car. Can they do that? And as I say, I don't mean to be glib, but I think that seems to be the case.
It could be sort of different if you, just on that point, and I thought it's a good point to raise. If you're talking about an easement, the right of way, I don't think it's parallel to that, but I think where there is a slight overlap is where it could be considered or maybe argued like a turbary right, for example.
Yes.
Which is an easement to take peats off a bog, and that has been established, but that is attached to the land and is a specific easement over a particular area of land. So that is different and entirely different from a special area of conservation. So
okay.
I wouldn't buy into it.
Seamus, listen, thank you very much. With the clocks against us, you can check out Seamus and his wonderful team physically in their offices in Letterkenny and Remelton. Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn Solicitors. And I checked, you are online. I checked.
Good.
What's the address?
Keep checking out that spot, gun.ie.
Good luck to you.
We're there to help. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. I do appreciate your time. Wow, I've not been defensive, but we spent the entire week talking about fuel protests, and I've spoken to so many people, farmers, hauliers, carers, all who've told their stories about how much pressure they're under with the price of fuel. But my word, some people just, I don't know if they like you or don't like you. Ryan McFadden's on the social slagging me off. We're listening to your programme and you're the biggest traitor in Donegal that's not a politician. He's also in the Northwest Fuel Protests Group as well. That Greg Hughes show on Highland Radio is one of the biggest traitors in Donegal. And Kevin's in there as well. Kevin, I never thought I'd be in, to be honest with you, a Northwest protest group being slagged off so bad. You can tell by the way he's questioning the team. He'll read the government script for his 30 pieces of silver. Kevin, come on. I mean, what more do you want? But anyway, if people don't like you, they don't like you, and that's fine, and I don't care. But, I mean, to be slagging me off in the group, the protest group, who we spoke to today, a member of that group today, to platform what they've done, and then to go take the time to go onto social media as well. And I must really have peeved them off. But anyway, listen.
Turn the volume up now. Let's go. Could a Q show on the radio? Shannon's on the screen. A brand new scene. Scanning what the internet has seen.
Oh, yeah.
Click, click, refresh. The feed is flying. All the viral trends were
we
now
don't have time for it all. But that is the intro to Shannon Wilkins' Scroll Patrol. I struggle with that, you know.
Wee tongue twister. Scroll Patrol.
It is a wee tongue twister. Right. Now, the drama movie.
So this is a new movie out in cinemas with Robert Pattinson and Zendaya, and a couple are about to get married, and over drinks one night they discuss the worst things they've ever done. And you'd think, you know, maybe like I stepped on a dog's tail or I stole an apple or something. The wife-to-be planned a school shooting.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
So then the whole fallout after that of he's having